Previously on Podcast Without Pretense. Hey, do we still record a show?
Yeah, I'm not sure we should do this anymore. We should definitely stop for a while.
Man, prophetic words from Eric Sandine. I am Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Eric Sandine.
And I, as Akhtar, is probably within a stone's throw of Eric, but for some reason cannot get on the show tonight.
His excuse was, I'm in California, which I almost responded with, wait a second.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, Eric's in California every fucking week.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, wow. Yeah, and I love how I'm already getting the little thing on beneath saying, hey, this connection is super slow. I am currently doing this from my phone, which explains the audio and video quality, which, while not awesome, is not likely to disappear in the middle of the episode.
It actually, your connection looks pretty good. I don't know how much data you're burning through or how much you have, but we should probably watch that.
Unlimited. Right, I've got T-Mobile, and I'm on an unlimited plan. I was grandfathered in, so I'm good to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Also the reason I will never cancel my T-Mobile plan.
I'm on
the unlimited plan. Yeah.
I know we give a lot of shit to Comcast because of all the problems I've been having, but while Comcast has been a fucking thorn in my side, T-Mobile, more often than not, has been pretty damn good. Like, consistent, yeah. Right? Like, in Atlanta in particular, it's got a very strong presence, so there are hardly any places in Atlanta where I hit a dead zone. Once in a while, but it's pretty rare. And they've been great with customer service. And so, I mean, it's kind of like the opposite experience I've had from Comcast.
Yeah. Yeah, the only dead zone I really hit is at my house, which honestly doesn't bother me that much. So, because I'm at my house. So it doesn't matter.
The only time you're not getting anything on your phone is when you're at home. I'm going to guess you don't have a landline.
I do not.
So when you're home, you have no means of contacting the outside world or having the outside world contact you from a mobile.
Well, I get 3G. That usually comes through fine. 4G like just kind of kicks in and out. But
and I'm sure you could.
If one were to call me, I would probably get it. Maybe
you could connect through Wi-Fi too. I'm sure.
Yeah.
So you could do like Wi-Fi based calls. I mean, it might be a little tricky. Should you ever, God forbid, have to call 911, but other than that, everything's fine. On a related note, have you?
She'll be fine.
Great. Have you experienced any earthquakes yet since moving out there?
I haven't, and it's been over a year. So, yeah.
Are you disappointed?
A little.
Like you want a little one,
right? Just so I know that like. Everybody's not just lying, you know, because right. Like the longer this goes on.
So it's not that you're watching.
Keep people. San Francisco.
Like you're watching a video of a YouTuber from San Francisco on there and there's someone just out of frame with their hand on the shelf, rocking it gently.
Yeah, just pushing it. Yeah.
I actually experienced an earthquake here in Atlanta once.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was tiny. It was so tiny that, you know, Californians probably wouldn't even notice it. But I remember sitting down on my couch and my wife was sitting next to me and I turned to her and I said, well, that was weird because the house did just a little shudder. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, so here's the thing is that I live very close to train tracks. I mean, right. Like across the street from train tracks. And occasionally a freight train will come through. And if it's coming through and it's a particularly heavy train, you can feel the vibration in the house from the train. And this kind of felt like that, but there was no train, right? So I was like, huh, that was weird. And then I didn't think anything of it. And then within about 5 minutes, I started seeing Twitter and Facebook light up with stuff about the earthquake. And I thought, wow, I actually felt it that time because Georgia gets earthquakes, but they tend to be below the threshold where you can actually feel it.
Right. Yeah, I've never experienced one anywhere I've lived. So it'll be interesting once the first one rolls around, I guess.
Well, any natural disasters you have lived through? Anything that's been particularly
fast? No.
Jeez. I mean, let me tell you, man.
Flash flooding in southern New Mexico was fun.
That can get pretty serious.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. That was, we were driving back from the Trinity site way down south. And yeah, just giant flood covering the entire road. Luckily, I had a Subaru at the time, so the all-wheel drive kind of kept me pretty well stuck to the road. But the worst part about that experience was that the only radio station we could get was actually playing Dark Side of the Moon, like the entire album. So driving through this, you know, flash flood for like a solid 20 or 30 minutes straight, the only thing on the radio was Dark Side of the Moon, which is not, it doesn't make you feel any more comfortable when you can't see 5 feet in front of you.
We get flash floods occasionally here. You know, I don't live too far from the Chattahoochee River in Atlanta, and that can actually overflow if it's raining hard enough. But that's far enough away in the other part of town where that doesn't affect me. But some of the streets that I'm close to have really poor drainage for their storm drains. Mm. So if it's raining really hard, really suddenly, you get flooding. Nothing so severe as to really worry about stalling out necessarily. You might hydroplane, yeah, which is bad, but you know, it doesn't really get deep here. The only flood experience I've had where it got a little hairy was when my wife and I were visiting her brother who lives up in Pennsylvania, and it was a winter and it snowed a lot, but then the weather got warmer. So all the snow was melting off and the runoff was flooding the local streams, which were flowing right over the streets. And there was one point where we were really not sure if the car was going to make it through. And we had to, we took a moment. We converted religions about 8 times. and we fortunately made it through there. But and we didn't have any creepy music going on. And I was going to say Malcolm McDowell was in the back seat singing in the rain over and over again, but that's not true. It would have been funny, but it's not true. Here in Georgia, we get tornadoes.
Right.
And we haven't had any in the city of Atlanta for a few years, but if you had visited Atlanta about 8 or 9 years ago, I think it was, there were tornadoes that moved through downtown Atlanta. And in downtown Atlanta, where you have these high-rise buildings, you would see little windows throughout the buildings that had popped out. So just black spots in some of the high-rise buildings, like the hotels and stuff. And it took a long time for all of that to get repaired. It's pretty much repaired now. A lot of the places that got torn down, now there's condos where they used to be. A lot of them were like old mills and stuff that hadn't been used, and now they've been converted into lofts and stuff like that.
It's like a controlled burn for a forest or whatever. You know, it was eventually.
It was nature deciding to do some gentrification, whether we wanted it or not. Yeah, it was a little rough. Luckily, I mean, it didn't hit where I live in Atlanta. It was real close to where I'm at now. I wasn't living in this house when that happened. But had I been living here, the tornado would have probably lifted off the ground maybe a mile and a half away. So pretty close. Yeah. So we've had some of those, but nothing too major. Speaking of disasters, did you watch Hotbot?
Oh, I did. I did. Yeah, that was.
So Ayaz, I don't think Ayaz has watched it yet. You know, I think we're the only two who have watched it so far. Because I don't think Ayaz has seen it.
I don't think he's watched it yet either. I think my connection just like dropped out for a second there. Yep.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I see the warning on you now too. I thought it was just going to be me. I don't think Ayaz has seen it yet, but you and I have seen it. And I think we can both, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Eric, but I think this movie was god awful.
Oh, it was horrible. It was it was also one of those movies where it was awful enough that I have a lot of notes. Like a lot.
I have I have some notes on this one,
after
too.
After a while.
Yeah.
Like, there were a lot of notes for the first half, and then I was just like, no, I'm done.
This might actually...
We're writing notes to this.
This might actually be one of those where I started taking notes and then stopped because I got depressed. Yeah. Let me see.
My notes get more and more sparse as the movie goes on, and then eventually I'm not even calling them by their character names. There's just notes that are like, they went to a club or something. Oh, it's this guy's party. Who gives a fuck? That is my last note.
So this movie made no sense too, right? Like, there were entire segments where it was, again, like, every now and then we get a movie where I start screaming, what the fuck is happening? This was one of those movies. Man.
Yeah. It was definitely pretty bad, especially considering how many, like, you know, B, C class actors were in it. It was pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, I was upset that Larry Miller was in it. I was more upset that Larry Miller got naked in it.
Yeah.
And Larry Miller, by the way, he plays the character that ultimately made me start screaming, what the fuck is happening in this movie? Because his motivation made no sense. Like, the whole point is that he plays a senator in the film who wants a female android sex toy for his own perverted pleasure, and he's willing to kill to get it and to keep it a secret.
Right.
But then he ends up planning a huge party to reveal it, and it makes no sense.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. Like, he's trying to hide it so much, the fact that he has one, then reveals it, but then is also trying to make them legal the entire time for some odd reason. It's
just dumb. So, just to keep things fucking moving along, maybe we'll hear Ayaz's thoughts on this the next time, but do you want to go through your notes?
Yeah, we can go through. So, what was my time? Oh, so my time was 3 minutes and 12 seconds.
Wow. Was there something specific that stopped you, or were you just like, fuck this?
It was, I have exactly where it was, which is like, we don't even make it to the plot yet. It's the like intro video, or the reporter is talking to the hotbot or whatever.
Right, there's an opening in this film where there's a documentarian who is covering the development of the hotbot sex robot, and he's only seen in the very beginning of the movie in an effort to set up the premise of the sex robot. That's his only purpose, and after that he's gone.
And
he's English.
My note was, so hotbot, we have the intro training video. They go through some science-y crap that's just boring and pointless. So he's talking to this one hotbot who, it doesn't pop up again either. Like, it's really, you're just looking at this random girl. He becomes erect, slightly amusing. Robot starts jerking him off. Oh, boobs. Oh, straight to the blowjob. Jeez, they could have just... What did I say? Oh, they could have just quit this movie right now. 3 minutes and 20 seconds in. I need to take notes, and this is horrible.
Wow. that's so I got 24 minutes into it.
Damn, that's pretty far in.
and I thought... More than once, I seriously considered just walking away and not finishing it.
I'm almost certain I didn't finish it. Like, I remember the end happening, but I don't have any notes about it.
Not only did the end happen, they had outtakes during the credits.
Oh yeah, I do remember that actually.
So. Yep. Here's some of my notes. I didn't start writing notes till about 24 minutes in, so I had to go back and kind of revisit things. But I said, this is a lame, weird science meets American Pie, which is essentially That's the plot. So in Weird Science, you've got two characters who try to create the perfect girl because they want to have someone to practice on so they can get good at picking up chicks. And then in American Pie, you've got characters who just want to get laid. And essentially, it's a combination of those two things, except in this case, the two kids don't create the girl. They
stumble up.
they run her down with a car.
Right.
I said, I almost just walked away from this movie because it was just lame and dumb and not funny. I cannot stress that enough. This movie was not funny. It's a comedy that is absolutely not funny. Also, there's a typo in RoboVision. Oh, right. So there's a bit.
I think you emailed
bit where
us
you
about
see,
that, and I didn't spot it.
Yeah, there was a bit where you see it from the robot's perspective, and I don't remember what the typo was. I don't think I wrote it down, unfortunately. But yeah, there's a bit where you're seeing. The robot is
or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and she's looking at a guy and all these different labels pop up and one of them is misspelled. I might actually have it in here somewhere, but let's see. If you've seen the Intelligent Toilet episode in Bob's Burgers, that's this film. Except instead of a boy finding an intelligent toilet, two boys find a sex robot. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same story. The basic plot is you have a company that makes customized sex robots and a sleazy congressman played by Larry Miller, and yes, we see his naked ass later, browbeats the company into sending him one. The company does, but the robot escapes the FBI agents who are meant to pick her up and transport her to the congressman, and she ends up with a couple of high school losers. I'm not going to take a lot of notes here. I will say at one point the robot is looking at one loser and ascertains he is a virgin. We see this in RoboVision. Here's the typo. We also see that they misspelled the word gentleman and spelled it gentalman, G-E-N-T-A-L-M-A-N. Loser one is supposed to be the one we empathize with. Loser two is super obnoxious, so I didn't bother with names either. Yeah. Loser One's family is religious, though their interpretation of the Bible is somewhat confusing. There's a brief scene that spoofs Blade Runner and fuck this movie. Oh, and later, they call out the reference explicitly, showing that they have no respect for their audience as if this film wasn't proof enough. Fuck this movie. Since I'm not taking a lot of notes, I'll sum up my thoughts. This movie tries to use shock humor, but it's not funny or shocking. It's just lame. Not even dumb humor, just lame and sad. Lame and sad, like a supporting character from a Charles Dickens novel. Okay, let me lay down some truths. Bardot, the sex bot, asks outright if Loser One wants her for the same reason the FBI guy wants her. He says no, but the truth is he does. He wants to bone her, but he says he likes her. Only thing is, she doesn't really have a personality. The manual he read essentially says her personality emerges after spending time with people, but she's spent next to no time with anyone, so his words mean nothing. Since he cannot possibly like her on any level other than sexual attraction. He's just as much of a sleazeball as the congressman is, only he's not as honest with himself, and he's a thief because he didn't buy the robot. The movie tries to force the idea that Bardot and Loser One have something meaningful without actually earning that. It's awful. And the character of Loser Two should die in a fire. And the bully character should die in two fires. But I will say Loser Two actually calls Loser One out on his bullshit in a touching text messaging sequence. It's a montage between the two characters where they're texting each other. And then Loser One realizes he really loves Cassidy, a girl who has been dating the bully character, and that comes out of nowhere and fuck this movie. Uber-religious dad likes to talk about how Loser One's mom is a freak in the bedroom. He's also violent towards his kids. Lame. Also, there seems to be setups for visual gags, but no actual gags. The guest bedroom in the congressman's mansion, for example. And wait, the congressman is introducing his sex bot to his constituents? What the fuck is going on in this movie? Watching the credits, it's clear that a lot of scenes had improvised lines. So that's what happened to this movie. Yeah. They improvised a ton of shit and then tried to edit it together and make a film out of it. So yeah. your basic premise is these two losers who work in fast food accidentally hit the robot lady with their car. They think she's a human being and that they've killed her. They don't seem particularly upset that they killed a person. They mostly seem scared that they're going to get caught. But they aren't freaking out that they hit a woman at all. Like, yeah. They're surprisingly calm about it. And they put her in the car to take her to Loser One's house and hide her until they can dispose of the body the next day. But then, of course, yeah, she's a robot. She turns out to be okay. She wakes up the next morning. She goes to have a shower. And then the shenanigans start. And so many things are wrong with this movie.
I have random specific rants or notes about some of them. Yeah. The two idiots have hit something. It's probably the hot bot. Hold on. The hot bot can kick the asses of two Secret Service FBI agents, but can't cross a fucking street. Perhaps it's a European model and thought traffic came from the other side. That joke, better than anything in the movie.
Absolutely. Eric just elevated the film to a level it did not earn.
Right. Let's see. So I guess at least the robot showers. Oh, and this is when we hear the robot. I think she talks for the first time. And my note there was, I know we can make better computer-generated voices than that. Siri sounds leaps and bounds ahead of this. Robot. Oh, right, because at some point, the robot is actually in trial mode because you have to pay. So the sexbot is a subscription model, which I actually thought was pretty funny. Like the concept of that, not how it was executed in this movie at all. But yeah, so they needed to like the robot like shut down because it went into trial mode. And they needed to insert payment in order to go further. The two idiots randomly go to a sex shop for some reason because they think that the guy that runs the sex shop will know what to do with this thing. So they print out the manual.
They clearly know the guy who runs the sex shop. Right. And he's a complete asshole just like everybody else in this movie. And his character is completely inconsistent. Like he feels like a different character in every scene. Again, probably because of so much improvisation that was going on during the movie. But yeah, I guess they figure like, well, she's clearly meant for sex. He runs a sex shop, so maybe he knows what's going on. I guess that was the justification.
And so this is the point where they insert payment. My note here was, you use the credit card in the mouth. I guess that could have been more lewd. I expected less of this movie.
That's fair.
The younger sister turns her super religious at some point. Because they're hiding the hotbot in the little sister's backyard, not treehouse, but just like little playhouse.
Playhouse. So we should also mention the father of Loser One is played by the guy who played Turk in Scrubs.
Yep.
And the mother
is, what's her name? Yeah, the mother is Steve Carell's wife, whose name I can never remember.
The mother played the Angela on The Office.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So you've got Angela from The Office and Turk from Scrubs as the parents. And they're very, like I said in my notes, they're very religious. Like they're going to church early in the movie. And the little daughter is teaching Bardot about religion, at least a child's understanding of religion. But despite being these supposedly religious people, the dad is constantly threatening violence toward his son and is constantly talking about how the mom is a freak in the sack, which is so weird. Like that the dad is so judgmental toward his son, while simultaneously being a horn dog and talking about it in front of his son?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I have... So, weird scene with the principal asking about a vagina. Now I don't remember what that one was about.
I don't remember what that was about either.
Yeah, little sister reading the Bible with the robot. Is the robot going to become religious? Yes, it does. Yep, robot became religious or something. Great. Factory reset? All right. Anyway, moving on. We're at an arcade. The bully is there. Wait a second. The bully's hitting on the hotbot. The hotbot seems into this. Don't you think they would have programmed the hotbot to have, like, some sort of allegiance to the person who paid the subscription? Something like that? Unclear. Oh, cool, this high school kid has cards about his dick. Oh, right. Yeah. He has, like, a business card that's, like, about his dick size or something. Kids are supposed to be in high school. I don't think that's a thing. Anyway.
Yeah.
Finally we figure out that the two guys that were driving the hotbot around were FBI agents. The first time that's revealed significantly far through the movie. I figured it was, like, CIA or private security. I don't know. All right, car chase now. Robot is telling them how to escape. Oh, yeah, there's a car chase, and the robot's, whatever. Yeah.
No one cares. It is one of the most boring car chases you've ever seen committed to cinema.
She beats up the FBI agents or something. Good. Douche guy picked them up. This guy had a chainsaw the whole time. These are the worst FBI agents I've ever seen. And that's pretty much where my notes just, like, stop. They went to a club or something. Oh, it's that guy's party. Who gives a fuck? His girlfriend slapped him. Now the robot slapped him. Now he's going to fight nerds or some shit.
The movie's just, like I said, it's pointless. It's the plot is paper thin. The scenes make no sense, again, mostly because they relied so heavily on improvisation. I didn't know about the improv stuff until I watched the credits. And in the credits, you see the outtakes of other improvised scenes where it just people are just going off on stuff randomly. And you realize, like, oh, well, that's why there's no consistency in characters or in the way this film is making. It's like, there we go. Had to dismiss a call coming in. But there's no consistency at all with the characters or with the plot, which is why, like, even if the improvised scenes were funny, it still would make a shitty movie because there'd be no continuity, no narrative. But the problem is they're both not funny, and they have no continuity. So you get the best of both worlds. The closest to anyone funny that we get is Larry Miller. There's a couple of moments of Larry Miller as the congressman where he is about as close to being funny as anything in this movie. But everything else is just miserable.
Yeah. This might be one of the worst movies we've ever watched. It's definitely... The humor is definitely there at the level of Rock and Roll Frankenstein.
If you think about it, it's like if you were to take one of those movies like Anchorman, where clearly improvisation plays a big part, and just made that go wild and never outlined a framing for a story at all.
Yeah, right? It's like Anchorman. Yeah, exactly. If Anchorman didn't have a story and you just told a bunch of people to run with it and there was a sex robot, this is what you'd end up with.
Yeah. Sadly, that is true. So was that your pick, Eric, or was that Ayaz's?
It was. That was mine. Because for some reason I thought it was alliteration. There was honey and then hot pot.
Well, I mean, I gotta say, at least it wasn't another fucking Christian movie. We did so many of those in a row. Again, I have nothing against a good movie if it's Christian or not Christian. I don't care. If it's a good movie, it's awesome. The problem is when it's a bad Christian movie, you just feel awful.
Yeah, it's just not very
because good. it's like not only is it not a good movie, but it's not doing anyone any favors.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think one of the movies I have on my list as possible for next time is I can't remember the title of it. It's the one that has got Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton in it as choir leaders. Joyful Noise, I think is what it is. So the reason why I would pick Joyful Noise is because it was shot here in Atlanta, and I know some of the people who are extras.
Two hours. Oh God,
dude, I didn't say it was what I was definitely picking. I said it was on my list. So there were a couple that I had on my list, and that was one of them. But you know, who knows? I might pick something else.
So we can do this part. I signed up for Sling TV again for another trial, because I wanted Comedy Central for the roast of Rob Lowe, right?
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, which I watched live. But the reason I thought about that is because then I realized my trial came with Lifetime, which meant that on Sunday, I pretty much watched a bunch of Lifetime movies when I was really bored.
Poor, sick bastard.
Well,
were they as good as the Will Ferrell one?
There was a Craigslist killer one.
Oh, wow.
It was 2 hours long, and it was pretty excellent, actually.
Noted.
The roast was pretty good too, if you just want to see a bunch of people make fun of Ann Coulter for a while.
Yeah, I can't watch those usually because they
pretty
things get very squirmy very quickly in those, and I have a low threshold for that stuff.
It definitely got there real fast.
The only thing I've watched recently that's of any note is Hateful Eight. I finally watched that yesterday. And have you seen Hateful Eight?
It's on a queue somewhere.
It's on a queue somewhere. It's worth seeing, I would say, but it doesn't make the list of my favorite Tarantino films, which surprised me because based on the cast and the setting.
Yeah.
And the general premise, I thought it was a shoe-in to become one of my favorites. But the problem I had was there are a couple of them. One is that there are no likable characters in that movie. They're all unlikable, which can still be interesting, but it means that you don't really feel empathy for anyone. So you don't feel very invested in the movie.
Yeah.
The core of the film is a mystery, but if you don't care about anybody, then you don't really care how the mystery turns out. Also, the mystery is not that hard to figure out. Like the actual mystery, it's pretty easy to figure out what's going on. And finally, the gore was like, I have no problem with gore. I like gory movies. It just felt like it almost felt like it belonged to a different kind of film. Like the violence was definitely necessary for the story. Like, I have no problem with the violence, but the violence is depicted in such a gory, over-the-top way, which maybe it was kind of a homage to, like, Sam Peckinpah or something, like one of those Western directors. Maybe that was it. But it was just – it felt – everything else felt so – almost like a stage play that the gore effects felt out of place. Yeah. All that being said, though, the performances are amazing.
We went and saw Don't Think Twice, which is the Mike Birbiglia and Ira Glass.
I've heard so many good things about that. Did you enjoy it?
Here's what I'm going to say about it. It's got a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. I do not think it deserves that.
Well, keep in mind, 99% doesn't mean it's 99% quality. It means that 99% of the critics gave it a positive rating.
But, you know, it was an okay movie, but all of the people walking out of the movie saying it was amazing and that nobody tells that kind of story anymore, I mean, it was like an okay slice of life movie. It was written pretty well. Parts of it were funny. Parts of it were sad. You know, it was. I didn't not like it, but I also was just kind of like, all right, well, that was an all right film. Like, it wasn't.
Gotcha.
I maybe it's because I didn't identify with it as much as like everybody in the theater that I was in, because apparently all of them were in comedy troupes when I saw it. But
well, yeah, I mean, like, there's certain communities you go and see that movie and it's like, yeah. Oh, everyone feels this deep in their souls because they've all been there.
Right. And it was funny, because as we're walking out, I'm like, I like finally see the theater, because first of all, we had like, it's not like wide release, it's limited release. So we had to drive to like a little, you know, arts theater in like Piedmont to see it. Whatever, fine. That's not a big deal. But as I'm watching people flow out of the theater, I'm like, oh, these are exactly the people I would expect to be at a movie produced by Ira Glass and Mike Birbiglia.
Like, gotcha.
Yeah, like, that was exactly who was there for that. And I'm like, it was, the movie was all right, but it wasn't
it's kind of like if you go to, say, like a Garrison Keillor live show.
Right.
You're going to see, you're going, the audience you see there is, you're going to look at them and say, this is exactly what I thought a live audience for Garrison Keillor would look like. You wouldn't expect, like, I don't know, an army of juggalos. That would throw you.
Right.
But
that would probably be super interesting, though. I would go to
it
that
would be
show. If I knew that a would bunch be of jugglers were going.
An amazing train wreck. Like, an amazing train wreck. Yeah, I see that. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the movie, largely because so I'm a writer and I'm an occasional actor, very occasional actor. And one of my pet peeves, and it's something I've committed myself, is that I really get tired of reading stuff about writers, and I get tired of seeing stuff about actors. Sure. Because it's so masturbatory, right? Like, it's just watching or reading something about the profession that it relates to, unless it's like a guide, like, here's how you do this. It just seems so egotistical and pointless to me.
Well, and I think that's why the movie for me wasn't super interesting, because I was like, okay, like, if I take the movie for just being characters and disregard the fact that they're, like, you know, supposed to be, I mean, the basic concept of the movie is you have an improv team and one of them gets into the equivalent of SNL, and let's see how that plays out between the relationships you know, within the team.
Sure.
But if you look at the relationships, it's not that great of a film. So
that's, well, and here's the,
that was mainly my problem.
The thing for me would be, if I were to watch that, I'd say, well, shit, I've witnessed this firsthand, because the improv theater I go to all the time, about, I think, 3 or 4 of the former members of that improv team are now in various groups with Second City. So
yeah, I mean, and it'd
you know,
like,
so it's
yeah.
like.
But I think that the audience for this movie was the people who are super interested in, like, improv as a thing, but not necessarily people who know anyone who does improv.
Gotcha.
You know, that's the audience, because they want to see, like, this interesting dynamic about how that plays out. I don't necessarily know that the film is for people where they know how that plays out every time.
Right. Well, I mean, I got to tell you, like, some of the best improv I've ever seen was so inside baseball that It was best in the sense that I thought it was the most entertaining and most insightful, but at the same time I realized it reached about 5 of us in the audience. We knew what they were talking about. We knew the tools of improv and therefore could recognize it. But you can't really say that's good improv, because it ignores 95% of the audience.
Oh yeah. It's like, you know, watching I mean, yeah, some of the stuff like I've seen at Second City when I was in Chicago, and even just watching some of the UCB live shows, there's definitely some of that stuff is hilarious if you know what they're talking about, or you know how the rules of improv or the rules they're playing inside of. Otherwise,
right.
It doesn't make any damn sense. Like if you right. know their rule set, it's funny, but yeah.
Yeah, because in order for you to find humor in someone breaking the rules, you have to know what the rules are, right?
Right.
So if you don't know what the rules are, then it's not funny when someone breaks them. Here's another example. Here's an example in a movie that's not about breaking rules, but it is one of the things that I absolutely hate. And this relates back to Hotbot, because I mentioned in Hotbot they made a reference to Blade Runner. And that reference is
out for it. Yeah.
Yes. That's what I hate. I fucking hate it. Yeah. If you're going to make a reference, have the balls to respect your audience enough to not call it out. So, right. For example, there's a bit where the porn star owner is trying to do the test that's in Blade Runner, where you're asking the various questions. I can't even remember what it's called anymore, yeah. Which is terrible that I've forgotten the name of the test, and I'm sure our listeners and viewers are screaming at me right now.
Oh, Turing test. Wait, is that what you're talking
about?
No,
not Turing test. Turing test is for AI. No, it's a test that they make up the name for it, but it's a psychology test where you ask psychological questions of your subject, and based upon their answers, you can determine whether they're a replicant or they're human.
Oh, right.
And I wanted to say it was the Ludovico technique, but that's from Clockwork Orange, so that's not right either. I can't remember it. I apologize, fair viewers, that I cannot remember. But anyway, the sex shop owner is administering that test to Bardot, essentially, finding out, you know, more about her by asking these questions. And I'll admit, I was amused that the movie had the balls to go there to reference a classic science fiction film, which more likely than not, the audience for that movie had never seen.
Yeah.
But the problem is they then later specifically call out Blade Runner. They reference it, and that ruins the joke. And they're obviously not the only ones to have ever committed this sin. I hate when movies do this. And one of the best examples I can point to is Mel Brooks's Robin Hood Men in Tights. At the end of that, Dave Chappelle's character is going to become the sheriff of Nottingham. And all the characters say, "Who ever heard of a black sheriff?" So that's funny. That's a funny joke because that is a reference to
there.
Exactly. That's a reference to Blazing Saddles. And then Dave Chappelle says, "I don't know, worked in Blazing Saddles." And then he mugs for the camera. See, that's not funny because if you know what Blazing Saddles is, you got the joke. And you don't need it to be called out because you got the joke because you've seen Blazing Saddles. If you haven't seen Blazing Saddles, having someone tell you, "Hey, that's a reference to a movie you haven't seen," doesn't make it funny.
Doesn't make it funny. Yeah, right.
So I hate whenever any movie does that or any show or anything. Like if they make a reference to something and you trust your audience to pick up on it, then that's a joke that part of the audience gets, and you should be satisfied with it. But if you feel the need to explain your reference, unless you make that a laborious process where it becomes its own joke, then all you've done is insulted your audience's intelligence, and you lose whatever goodwill you might have gotten from the people who recognize the reference in the first place. So for writers out there, don't explain your references. Also, don't just reference super obscure shit either. If you're going to reference something, reference a cultural touchstone so that there's at least a chance your audience is going to pick up on it. That was mostly advice to Quentin Tarantino.
Wow. Yeah. We know.
Hey, Tarantino. Tarantino, you make awesome movies. Just don't get fucking indulgent with your references. Okay? You know, don't get too precious with those. You know, yes, we get it. You watched a lot of really shitty movies, and they were all made in the 70s. We got it. We're on the same page now.
Yeah.
Make more movies like Jackie Brown, because that movie was fucking awesome.
We've all caught up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we could probably wrap this up since Ayaz isn't here. We don't have a whole lot more to talk about, I don't think.
Nah.
Eric, you still doing Soylent?
Yeah, I am. Liz has been drinking it for breakfast, too. I've doubled up my order. It's working.
I'm still doing it, too. I ordered 2 boxes of it the other week because doing it box by box, I run out too quickly. I have dropped about 20 pounds since I started.
Crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's due to multiple things. It's due to Soylent. It's due to I'm not exercising more, but I am trying to walk more frequently. For a while there, when it was super hot in Atlanta, I was taking a lot of rides just because it was so hot that walking was miserable. It's starting – today was rough, but it's starting to cool down a little bit. Like it's getting to the low 90s. So I'm occasionally walking more now, and that helps. I can report that – that it makes it counting calories way easier. That's really what I'm using Soylent to do. It's not that Soylent magically has me drop weight. It's just that it's way easier for me to keep track of how many calories I'm consuming in a day.
Yeah.
So
it makes you pay attention to it, or it makes paying attention to like something like calories really easy. Cause I know that I now look at it just because I know like breakfast is 400 calories. Like I know what that baseline is every day. So yeah, even, throughout the day, you know, when I get my Google Fit report of how many calories I've burned or whatever, it just makes me pay way more attention.
It's and I think portion control, counting calories, I think that's the way for me right now. My plan is once I drop below, like once I hit 170, which I'm getting close to, once I hit 170. I hope to actually increase my exercise routine, and my goal here is not to like become in super awesome shape. And we have a friend who on Facebook has been exercising a lot, and so I see a lot of pictures of him with his shirt off. I am not going to become that guy. You know him too, Eric. I'll tell you after the show. Because I don't want to call him out on the show, but it's someone that we have spent time with in Las Vegas.
Oh, all right.
Someone who reacted poorly to a steak in the Sahara.
Oh yeah.
So now you probably know who it is. Anyway, more power to him. The guy looks great, but that's never going to be me. My intention is that I'm over 40 now, so I'm trying to just be better about health in general so that I don't have like a quick decline or something. So that's really, I mean, it's just really to try and have a healthy lifestyle. I'm not expecting to be on the cover of Men's Health anytime soon, unless I'm the before picture.
Well, I mean, that's like part of, a month and a half ago, I randomly signed up for a 10K. I've run one 5K before in my life, but I signed up for the 10K because I was like, oh, that's actually going to take work. I can't just actually show up and do it.
Right.
So
muscling through, like forcing yourself through a 10K is probably a bad idea.
Yeah. So that's, it's like slowly force myself to train and, you know, actually go out and run and do stuff like that. And like the other thing that works for me really well too, like speaking to the Soylent with the calorie counting and what stuff like that, is like just having tons of data makes me work out more, count those things or pay attention to it. So like my scale, you know, I have the Withings, I've heard it's pronounced Withings, unclear. Wi-Fi scale, that does like body fat measurement and like, you know, stuff like that. So even just the act of like stepping on that every day, even though I know that like the body fat measurement isn't going to be correct, but having a measurement every day can show a trend over time. So like stuff like that, also forces me to kind of pay attention. And yeah, so.
Yeah, I I'm also that way where the data is really helpful. I know not everyone is. I mean, there've been a lot of stories recently about people dropping off of using stuff like Fitbit. You know, there's just a very precipitous decline in use. And I understand that. Like, I think a lot of people are looking for the magic solution to a problem. And when it becomes apparent over time that that is not what you get with these devices are meant to give you information, but you're the one who has to use that information to actually make a difference. For some people, that's exactly what they need. And Eric, it sounds like you're that kind of person, the person who, when you get that data, it's a motivator. And it just means that, you know, you don't have the excuse of not knowing what's going on, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
You're getting the feedback where if you see a trend change over time, you realize, like, if it starts to go up instead of down, you're like, okay, all right, I got to stop screwing around here.
Well, and even simple things like having the slightly nicer scale that does like the body fat measurement gives you a little bit better signal because too, if you're like, so for me, you know, you initially hit that first thing, which is like you lose a bunch of water weight, right? So like your weight goes down. After a while, like especially with the running and stuff, your weight doesn't necessarily keep dropping at the same pace because you're actually making muscle while you're burning fat. So your weight might stay stable. And if that's the only trend you're tracking, then you won't know. Right. And so you'll feel like
you plateaued and that you're not making any more progress, but that's not necessarily the case. It may be that you're making progress. You're just muscle weighs more than fat. And
as much of those more specific data points you can get, you're going to see much better trends. And that's totally how I am. I just love tons of data. So,
well, in my case, the scale I have is a very simple scale. It just does weight, but it does track over time. So each time I weigh myself, it tells me if I've gone down or up. So I don't weigh myself. I don't weigh myself every day because weight fluctuates quite a bit. I do it like once a week, and when I do it once a week, I can see a general trend toward weight loss, which is great. It keeps me motivated too, because I can already see it, right? I can already see it in myself. Mm-hmm. 20 pounds is significant, so I can already see and like my belt buckle. Like I have to go another couple of notches in my belt now, which is great. Yeah. So. I just want to keep that going and until I get to my ideal weight, which is sadly like another 20 pounds. So it'll take some time, but I'll get there. If I stay, you know, vigilant and I don't have too many cheat days and I don't go too crazy on the cheat days I do have. Queso is so good, dude.
It's true.
Queso is so fucking good. Well, all right, cool. Well, this was kind of fun. You know, Eric, I'm glad that we had a chance to chat. Hopefully next week we can have all three of us on again. Yeah. Pretty soon I've got a trip coming up to Berlin, Germany. So I don't think that's going to be early enough in the week to impact Podcast Without Pretense recording. But I do look forward to coming back and talking at great length and pomposity about German cinema.
Great.
Which probably just means that I'll end up watching like some movie on the airplane ride over. It's as close to German cinema as I will get. So let's go ahead and take a look into the future. Next week on Podcast Without Pretense. Shut the fuck up, Iaz.
We're not watching it. That's gonna be worse than Hot Bot.